Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
This performance-based Christianity, it's not sustaining. I mean, you can do that for a while if your life is really good, but when your life falls down around you, you need the comfort that only comes from the gospel.
You can't make the argument that sexual diversity is good because God said of everything that he made in Genesis 1 that it was good.
Depression frees the Christian from the illusion that they can do everything themselves. Well, honestly, that puts you in a great position to hear the gospel.
Isn't it funny? They want to call us science deniers all the time, right? You don't believe in evolution, you're a science denier. It's like, well, if there was ever a science issue, this one's it. It's testable in a laboratory. You know, you can't get away from it.
In the next hour of Issues Etc., we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Those four soundbites in their entirety. We'll play them for you, and then you give us a call. You send us an email, send us a tweet, or go to our Facebook fan page and you vote. Your vote will decide which will be Issues Etc. soundbite of the week in the last half hour of the program. Hillary Clinton is often viewed as arrogant, as doctrinaire, as, well, kind of, in a lot of ways, authoritarian. Now, many people attribute that to her political philosophy or her personality. Could it have something to do, maybe not everything to do, but something to do with her religious faith of Methodism? Joining us to talk about Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and the United Methodist Church, Ken Woodward. He's a longtime guest. He spent 38 years as religion editor for Newsweek magazine. He's author of a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled The Democrats' Methodist Moment and the new book Getting Religion, Faith, Culture, and Politics from the Age of Eisenhower to the Era of Obama. Ken, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be with you.
What do people miss when they talk about Secretary Clinton but don't note the influence of religion in her life and her career?
Well, I think, first of all, they missed the fact that she is, or at least she was when I interviewed her back in 94, and I suspect still. She's a very sincere Methodist, but they also don't know what that means. There's a certain, we know best what's best for you, which comes across as arrogance. But she talks about principles and holding fast to strong principles and having policies and so forth. She's very much influenced by the church's social positions. They coincide with her, and they go way back to 1972, as they say in my book. This is a Democrats' Methodist moment, and it goes back to McGovern. There was that sense that, yes, we know what's good for you, and that comes across as arrogance, as well as confidence. And you're not going to budge her on things because she brings a not just a political conviction, but a moral and indeed a religious conviction to the stands that she has taken. So some people seem a little more pliable. Obama thought that he would, for example, he would that he had moved slowly on gay marriage, when in fact I think he had made up his mind and just decided when the wind blew right he would do it. So and he would come out in favor. Hillary's got the convictions. She's had them for a long time, and they haven't changed.
So, in other words, you're saying that what people often fail to realize about her, or maybe even mischaracterize her on, is that she has principles.
Very strong principle. There's no question about it. I don't think, I don't buy this stuff that she's an inveterate liar and all that kind of thing. I just don't see it. At least I don't feel it myself, and I think that's quite unfair. And I'm not taking political sides here, but because I said there is a downside to this. There's this kind of we know what is good for you, and that's a well, you'd call it paternalistic, except she's a woman, so let's call it maternalistic approach, and that's off-putting for a lot of people. So that's part of her. You know, part of her personality. But in the book, I talk about the going back to McGovern, the sort of party platforms that reflect the church's positions on social issues. I'm not saying they're copying. I'm saying if you look at the Democratic Party since McGovern, it's not the same party, by the way, as it was under Johnson and Kennedy and Roosevelt. Different constituencies altogether. They repudiated a strong Catholic identification with the Democratic Party at that time and didn't win it back, which is a big reason why McGovern lost back then. And they lost a lot of the blue-collar people. The unions were replaced by the feminist movement. I think one has to say, in all fairness, the abortion lobby. Planned Parenthood is almost an arm of the Democratic Party just when it comes to election time. And these are real shifts in constituencies. And as I say in my Wall Street piece, Wall Street Journal piece, the irony is that the largest single bloc among Democrats is not the African-American bloc, really, but the religiously non-affiliated. Takes about 24% of the party's loyal supporters, and so there's an irony here. You've got a woman who's a very convicted Methodist who is heading a party which has the largest single bloc is the atheist, agnostic, and most of all, just plain not affiliated. So that's what I explore in my Wall Street Journal piece.
You even say there at the end, maybe a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but you could say anyone can act like righteous Methodist just by being a liberal Democrat with respect to those none of the above.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in that. Now, I also say in the article that, you know, if you're Catholic and you can see a lot of the social justice tradition in some of the planks of the Democratic Party, and if you're Jewish, you can certainly see a kind of prophetic Jewish righteousness in the party, in the positions the party takes. But it's as if, what's the matter? You got a problem with same-sex marriage? You got a problem with transgender deciding which bathroom they want to go in? There's something's wrong with you. We're the righteous ones. We're standing up for those people. It's that attitude that I'm getting at. So a little bit of exaggeration there, but they're sort of secular Methodists, if you want to put it that way. But there is a lot of history to it because the Methodist Church has been the largest Protestant denomination going back to the middle of the 19th century. They lost that position to the Southern Baptists, who, of course, are much more conservative. And a lot of kids got raised on a strong dose of, you know, social justice, social action, and then they discovered they didn't need the religion. You know, that wasn't, you know, you could do that without having to go to worship on Sunday. You can just be a good liberal Democrat. I think there's a lot of truth to that.
You've mentioned it several times here, but flesh it out a little bit more, if you would, Ken, and that is this 1972 Methodist moment for the Democratic Party in McGovern.
Well, every 4 years, and they're always election years, the Methodists meet for 2 weeks, and it is just like a political convention. They have caucuses, they have floor fights, mud fights, over issues, various issues. Some are theological, but an awful lot of them are social positions that they're going to take. And then the winners get their position printed in the Book of Resolutions, which is to guide Methodists, and especially the people who work for the church and represent the church on Capitol Hill. These are their positions. And what I did in 1972 when McGovern was running, remember, McGovern was the son of a Methodist minister, raised in a Methodist manse, went to a Methodist college, studied to be a Methodist minister, switched teaching, went back to a Methodist college, and only later got into politics. And what I discovered that there was many of the positions taken 3 months earlier by the Methodist Church showed up in the Democratic Party platform that year. And that was the year when they changed constituencies, when they changed the rules about who was going to be allowed it into the convention. It came after the 1968 convention. It was a disaster, as you remember, in Chicago. So that's when the party change really reached for new constituencies. There's another book out. Oh, God, I can't think of his name right now, but he makes a similar point. And so what was their constituency? Well, it's turned out to be the professional class, the elites that get criticized so much. It's no longer, no matter, despite party rhetoric, the party of the working man. The unions don't really figure. Yes, the federal and state workers and the teachers, but that's about it. That's a very small proportion compared to what unionized America looked like in the 1950s with the auto workers and the rest. So it's a different constituency. It's not for the poor man and the common man, no matter how much they talk about it. We've got two parties where, wealth prevails.
Let's talk a little bit about Hillary Clinton, where she may differ from the United Methodist roots that she has. And one of those is on abortion, although the United Methodist Church has certainly flirted with abortion support. Lately, it's moved slightly away from that.
That's true. You're absolutely right on that issue. What's happened over the years is it's been, sort of like the Catholic Church. They've been, the left and the right have been fighting. And after 72, the more conservative Methodists, the more part of the pious tradition, started to organize. And they have fought back. And I think you're absolutely right that her position now has gotten more extreme on the issue, as it has with Obama, and by wanting to get the government to pay for abortions, get rid of the Hyde Amendment, that sort of thing. She's gotten even more to the left on that issue. You're absolutely right. So she's a little out of tune. But at the same time, I think she was probably more involved in the church when I interviewed her in 94, than she is now with all the jobs that she has had, Secretary of State and so forth. I think she's probably gotten away from it, yeah.
One of the things you mentioned about that 1994 interview with her when she was First Lady was that she actually described an ongoing desire from her childhood to become a Methodist minister.
Well, I didn't say from childhood, no. I asked her at that time, I said, look, I looked around the room, we were in the map room, and I said, you're only going to be here another 2 years, or if you're lucky, another six. It was during the first term, it was 94. This, by the way, was just before the Gingrich Revolution, and they, for the first time in, I think, 40 years, lost both houses. Hadn't happened since way, way back. So, and I think they gave me the interview for political reasons, but they didn't want me to interview the president. He didn't want to talk about religion, but they were confident in her because it really meant something to her. So, yeah, she just said, I said, do you ever think about being a Methodist minister? Because she had done lay preaching. She preached and she taught Sunday school and so forth. She said, I think about it all the time. Well, I'm thinking, I described the theme in the book. It's quite lengthy. I'm saying this is a great lead to a Newsweek story. Well, she probably thought the same thing, and her press secretary said, no, you can't use that. And I abided by it. I never did use it. I'm doing it now because it's past history. And there is that sense that among Methodists and some other Protestants, certainly, Congregationalists, you'll find it too, that public service of the kind she is rendering is a form of ministry. And so I think that she made that choice. She's not about to become a minister at her age, whether she wins or not.
You said of her then, and I wonder if you still say it of her now, that piety plus politics was her message. What do you mean by that, and does it still apply to Hillary Clinton?
Well, I really catechized the woman. I mean, I should go back and look at that interview. I'm sure it can be found somewhere. I said, people were questioning whether she was really religious or whatnot, okay? And so I said, it was like a catechism teacher. Do you believe in the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit? Do you believe this? Do you, basic Christian beliefs? And she said, I sure do. Now, imagine a First Lady submitting to that sort of thing. But I just felt she'd stand for it, and she did. Some people were pretty surprised when they read that article and saw that that she had submitted to that sort of thing. So there were questions about her, which I thought were unfair at the time. So that's why I put the questions to her. So, yeah, I think the piety is there. Methodism has its pious wing and always had, and a lot, not so much involved, more in about saving individual souls. And I think that the soul savers, including the Salvation Army, which comes out of Methodism, and the Wesleyan tradition and all of that within Methodism, a lot of these people, although they were primarily interested in saving souls, they're also the ones that, as part of that desire, went into the poorest sections of the big cities at the turn of the century. A lot of the immigrants were Irish Catholic, if you recall, and they did set up, welfare centers like the Salvation Army does today. Whereas the more educated Methodists did an awful lot of writing about social responsibilities, as if to catechize, the elites of the country. But they didn't get down and get their hands dirty with the poor like the pious ones did. It's a paradox, but you very often find that that's the way.
Ken Woodward is former religion editor for Newsweek magazine. He's author of a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled The Democrats' Methodist Moment, and a new book, Getting Religion, Faith, Culture, and Politics from the Age of Eisenhower to the Era of Obama. You can find out more about Getting Religion at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ken, thank you again for your time.
My pleasure.
In hour two of Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, September the 23rd, Pastor Chris Roseborough, Fighting for the Faith, will be alongside. We're going to be doing our weekly series with him this week in Pop American Christianity. The question before us and the answer he'll provide is the story of the prophet Elijah on Mount Carmel. Is it actually teaching us about tithing? Then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We'll play four soundbites for you. You vote and you get your opportunity to win the LPR bundle package that's coming up here in about 35 minutes on Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.